All right, thanks for making Locked On Nets your first listen of the day. Got a great episode for you. Getting excited for hoops this season. Talking some Nets win totals. Buddy, hit us with the beats.
Exactly that, my friend. The season is just around the corner, and as you don't know, if you don't know, Doug is deep into the projections. He lays them out beautifully at the top end of the Eastern Conference, and we try to figure out how close and tight are the margins from the Brooklyn Nets, depending on the roster, being at the top of or middle of the pack when it comes to the playoff bracket. This is regular season banter, my friends. Make sure you contextualize what is a really fun conversation, taking a look at the Nets and the Eastern Conference at large, and how some of these little factors can really impact how teams finish over the first 82.
Kyrie Irving matters, folks. I don't know another way to put it.
Hate to break it to you, friends.
We're gonna get for the regular season and for the playoffs too. We're gonna get into it all. This is a really fun one, talking Nets win totals and more. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. At Adam Armbrecht is me, Adam Armbrecht, over there at Doug Norrie. How are we as we head into the week, just a couple of days away from the Brooklyn Nets officially kicking off their NBA season? I was out in the woods, as you know, Doug. Fill me in on the landscape of things back at the shore. Did you have that kind of weekend off of football that gets you that buzz for the NBA to start?
Oh, I'm buzzing for NBA here, baby. I spent the end of the last week just putting together some win totals. We'll talk about that. I was going through team by team, updating minutes, trying to figure out what teams cut with different guys and who even made the rosters. And Nets had some news there. Not a huge bunch of stuff, but we're recording this Sunday night, so leading into Monday, we'll post this for Monday. But this is when this week starts off basketball. It's super exciting. This season's. I mean, it's going to be a different kind of season for sure. I'm glad to have basketball back in our lives for 100% sure.
And nobody more than me or fellow Giants fans are excited for the NBA to start, because it's something else to be watching, man. This is, I think this is the good news about the Nets and where they are as a franchise over the last handful of seasons. You don't have to risk coming into a year and saying, boy, do you think that they'll go 10-72? Probably not. So that's always a comforting feeling if you're a Giants fan. There's a handful of New York teams, really, that I think you don't get to have that kind of confidence in.
Yeah, like football. The football's over for football fans. New York football's over, but that's all right, because basketball.
Mid-October, when most NFL seasons end, as we all know.
At least in New York they do. Now, I spent the weekend the better part of last week, and then really kind of kicked it into overdrive to finish. Some of these teams are a little more difficult than others. Going through and projecting out win totals for every single team in the league, and some of those are fun to do, like the ones you do first, like Brooklyn and Philly and Milwaukee and teams that are good, and then you gotta, you know, sort of set a little timer to make sure you finish teams like Houston and OKC and some of these other teams.
You've done a bunch of this, right? Like, I mean, over the years, like you've done this multiple times. You say setting that timer. How grueling is it at the back end when you're just like, does it matter if I get to the 20 win teams, really? Does this have to factor into it?
It does. It does, actually, because the way that I run my system is it plays off the schedule too. So you need to project you need to know how good every team is so you can run the simulation against all the other teams. Mm-hmm. You can't leave a team out because you need to see win percentages for the Nets against the Rockets or like when they play, you know, right? Like you need to be able to see those win percentages. So you do have to do it for every team. And I do it every week anyway, because I do fantasy basketball projections every single night for the NBA, so it's just a good process to get into. But so I wanted to talk a little, get your opinion on, because I do have some win totals here. I have the Nets. I have a couple different scenarios for the Nets. This is the other thing you have to go through with each team, is the scenarios going into the season, which guys are hurt, how much they're going to be able to play, what are their timetables to return. Sometimes that's easy. Sometimes that's trying to figure out stuff a little bit on the fly. You know, Jamal Murray's expected back at this date, and he's going to play X amount of minutes. You know, Ben Simmons is back on the court for Philly. Can we project him for a whole season? Yada, yada, yada. But one thing that I thought was interesting with the Nets. So there's two things with the Nets. One, their win total was not as high as I thought it would be. I've already bet the over on the Nets. I did this prior to this exercise, 56.5. I took the over a few weeks ago. It's pretty much stayed in that range. But one, the Nets on my model came in lower than that, and the model actually has some real problems if Kyrie doesn't play. And so, not problems.
The model doesn't have problems. The Nets have problems, right?
They're still a good team. Like, this is still a 50-plus win team. This is a very good team on paper. It's nothing about that. It's that when I looked at the Nets really from top to bottom, where those minutes were going to go, about how many games each guy would play, I was pretty bullish on the amount of games each guy played across the league, basically. So that could be, sometimes that can get a little sticky. But right now, by my model, the Nets, if Kyrie, and this is probably gets, I already got some flack on Twitter about this, so I'm sure I'll get some feedback on it, like on YouTube and stuff too. If Kyrie does not play the whole season, right? If you were to sit out the whole season, I had the Nets finishing, like, it's close, but fourth in the East during the regular season. I got to be really clear about this with everybody. This is the regular season records, okay? Some of these teams are better prepared for the regular season than others. I'll go through some examples of what I mean by that later. But so this is like for the 82-game regular season. And I had the Nets finishing below Philly, okay, below Milwaukee, and actually below Atlanta in the Eastern Conference regular season standings if Kyrie Irving didn't play. If Kyrie comes in for about half the season, they scoot up to just about one. Just to let you know sort of the importance of him on the regular season for their team. When you hear that, what are your immediate thoughts? Because I think that when I put this out on Twitter earlier, the Nets, there was a lot of people that came in and said, like, I was kind of stone flat wrong. But
Can you give me the what's the spread of wins from first to fourth there when you talk about Kyrie being out for the whole season?
Because I'll tell you. It's so with Kyrie about half the season, this is assuming he would either get vaccinated or they change the mandate or something like that. Like some, you know, external thing happened for him to come back and play. I have him at 55.1 wins. If he does not play the whole season, and now, by the way, if he were to come back tomorrow, that'd probably ramp up to something like 57.5 or something like that. If he does not play the whole season, I don't have that right in front of me. I think it was 51.7 was the number. It was like somewhere around 3.5 wins he was good for on a full minute share, you know, missing something like 12 games for the season or so. 3.5 for half the season. So it ends up kind of being important. We can talk about why regular season. We've been mostly team regular season doesn't matter, and I still pretty much stick to that, except there are a few scenarios, and we saw it last year where it does. But does that, just as a not howing, I'm not showing you the formulas for how I calculated this, but does that, and I can go through some of the reasoning too, but does it make you concerned when you hear about this? Because this is the team I spent so long looking at this because it struck me as wrong every time I looked at it, and I kept massaging and kind of going through this, and then really when I came down to it, it made a little bit of sense from a regular season standpoint why the Nets might be in this case without Kyrie.
Well, my initial thinking is the idea of Milwaukee being up there obviously makes sense. Philadelphia, the outlier would be, or maybe I would think why you might be catching flack, quote unquote, is because of Atlanta. That it's somehow Atlanta is in this conversation.
I'm telling you this now. Yeah, I'm going to catch flack on that.
Yeah, nice. but the other reason why I want to know about the numbers between basically, okay, so somewhere 51, 51.5 out to 56, and you said the jump from fourth to first. So it means that all of these teams there that you're talking about at the top, it's the difference of 4 or 5 wins between this positioning. So, you know, do I think it's crazy that if Kyrie were to be a part of this team, they'd be right there at the top of it? And if they're not, it's, I think when you say the finishing the season fourth, it's like, oh, the Nets finishing right as the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference? Come on. But when you say the Nets finishing 3 or 4 games behind the number one seed, that frames it a little bit differently for me. So, I mean, I'm not totally blown away by that, honestly, because you know that you're going to lose. We talked about it, right? Everyone knows what the talent is that Kyrie is. So how can you not associate some level of drop-off with this roster? Even if we think that they're very well stacked from a depth perspective, and we talk about Patty Mills this offseason, and even some young guys, right, like Cam Thomas, and knowing that these guys are capable of contributing, okay, but you can't set the bar for, let's say, Patty Mills, who has a track record in the NBA. You can't say, okay, so can If you give me 60%, 70% of what Kyrie would be giving me, and I don't think that's the like-for-like swap when we talk about the rotations, but yeah, okay, 70% of Kyrie. It's obviously not going to translate to a like-for-like win total, or what about the opportunities when we talk about late game shots and who's taking the big spots and who creates better matchups on the defensive end and all those little details. So honestly, my instant reaction is, yeah, I think that kind of makes sense. If you had told me, you know, the Knicks get ahead of them, or, you know, the Nets fall into the sixth seed or the seventh seed, that would be more startling. I'm not really, you know, can I be totally surprised by the fact that a couple of teams, one of which won the championship last year, would be ahead of them? If you lost one of your stars, go across all those teams, take out one of their stars, tell me that they don't drop three or four seeds by the end of the season if you don't have Chris Middleton off the Milwaukee Bucks, right? It's going to affect the outcome of the year.
Yeah, well, I didn't tell Adam about where my Knicks projection was offline. the fact that you brought that up as a team, people aren't going to want to hear this then, because I have a pretty interesting Knicks projection here. I want to talk about why some of this stuff actually matters and why, look, is this model perfect? No, it actually backtests decently well against regular season. Last year got a little bit weird because there was so much COVID stuff that it was just really tough to parse out ahead of time that I'm not willing to wipe it away, but there were some things got a little bit wonky before. We'll get to some more of this in a second. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks combines two things that I love: daily fantasy and things that are easy. Prize Picks is the very best way to get into the prop game market with the NBA season really gearing up here. You got to head over to Prize Picks. It offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. They have all the superstar players as well as bench players. All right, we'll get to a little bit more of this here in a minute, but first, going to talk to you about a couple things that I love: daily fantasy and things that are easy. That's why I'm into Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best NBA DFS prop games on the market. They have more NBA props than any other DFS operator out there. Get all the superstar players, bench players as well, as you can use and put your fantasy knowledge to use. If you go to Prize Picks right now and use the promo code MBA, you're going to get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Also love free things, and that's what you get on Prize Picks when you use the promo code MBA. You pick 2 to 5 players, you use some over-unders on their projections, you can win up to 10x on any entry. Just you versus the projected numbers. You're not running into sharks over there, not trying to pile lineups together either. It's all there on Prize Picks. Don't hesitate. Download the Prize Picks app today or go to prizepicks.com. Use the promo code NBA. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy.
And of course, you've heard me or Doug telling you about this. It's a familiar scenario we've all run through. You have the idea of watching a device to catch the game. You're also streaming the live action on another device. You're begging Doug or a family member for the passcodes for your favorite streaming service. And you're just kind of scrambling. You get yourself caught up with a whole bunch of codes, passwords, devices, who knows whatery. Wouldn't it be nice if you could get it all in one place together and kind of get rid of some of those headaches? And that is why I want to tell you about the old DirecTV Stream. It brings all your entertainment, in one great place together without all the hassles. Live TV and on-demand favorites like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no more looking for passwords, and again, no more begging Doug for something, anything. I don't know what it is. We're on a podcast together and he doesn't want to give it to me. The bottom line is get rid of the clutter and you get rid of that confusion and get yourself TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at directtv.com. That's directtv.com. Compatible devices are required and content varies by package. So take me down the rabbit hole, Doug. This is the kind of thing that I like to sink my teeth in on, especially when I know you're doing the bulk of the legwork.
So a couple of more things with the Nets, and I'll tell you why it's sort of problematic on the Nets from a Nets perspective. I can't stress this enough, a regular season standpoint, right? We're not playing Kevin Durant 48 minutes. James Harden's not playing 44 minutes a game, right? Like, those aren't the scenarios that are happening. This is getting through an 82-game schedule and seeing what your team has that can kind of line up. Because what happens is, with every team, is, especially when it comes to win totals, sometimes the question is not so much who your superstars at the top, which is really important. It's what you can put on the court when those guys don't play. Like, that ends up really mattering as well. And your problems can cascade when your superstars step out. Some teams have more problems around this than others. Some teams are just deeper than others, right? So the Nets, while on paper are a very deep team, because they have basically, you know, let's say 12 professional basketball players that you feel comfortable being in the game, from a wins expectancy, a lot of these guys are complementary to Harden and Durant at this point. And so the drop-off that you get when you do not have one of those guys on the court actually is stark. With Kyrie, that wasn't the case, right? It was that you could always basically stagger. You could be, you can make sure you're always staggering a superstar for even the whole seasons, whether it's just in your rotations or in the games that those guys are not playing, right? And so the drop-off in minutes is way less severe when Kyrie's on the court, right? Or just when you have these superstars. When you don't have it, what you end up happening is going from Kyrie's minutes, going from like Kyrie 33 and a half minutes a game, let's say, to making up those 33 and a half minutes with the guys that I mentioned before, like a little bit more Patty Mills, a little bit more Javon Carter, you know, right? Like maybe a little more Cam Thomas. Yeah, it's mostly fine-ish, but it's everyone would agree it's a massive drop-off from Kyrie Irving, right? So where you're picking up those minutes actually matters over the course of the regular season. So when you look at this Nets team, you'd be crazy if you didn't. Yes, they have the two of the top 10 best players in the game. That's why, even without Kyrie, my model, even probably being a little bearish on them, is like 53 wins, right? So like this is their 53 win team without a max player, like who's one of the top 15 best players in all of basketball. So they're an awesome team. What I'm saying is people, I think, sometimes fail to grasp the cascading effect of losing a guy like that and the replacement level pieces you have to put in next, you know, in his place, which are still okay, but actually a little bit worse in some ways than some of these other teams.
Well, so yeah, so it's a two-part thing because you mentioned about getting to the playoffs and saying, well, this is where we'll run max minutes for KD and for James Harden, and it mitigates maybe not having a player like Kyrie Irving on the court. The difference would be it's like you can't go into your model and say, well, you're not going to have a Kyrie for this year, so I'll dial up the minute shares for Kevin Durant and Harden.
Exactly.
It's not the way that it works, right? You have to say, no, those minutes have to go somewhere else. And then like I think if you put it into, you know, put it into real basketball terms. So the Nets go out against Team X, and Kevin Durant comes up towards 36, towards 40 minutes. That's where he's capping. So you're still going to have a whole bunch of situations in that game where a Bruce Brown, a Javon Carter, a Patty Mills, someone's going to have to step up and make a couple of shots, and by percentage chances, they're less likely to hit them than Kyrie Irving would be, and that's the difference between a game-winning shot or winning by five, losing by two. Boom. A handful of those throughout the season. That's the difference that you're talking about in this projection. And then the second thing you said there, when you talk about some other teams in the NBA, listen, everybody wants to be superstar top heavy with complementary pieces around it. But when it comes to projections, you'll verify this for me. When you have a team that is maybe pretty balanced from top to bottom and isn't necessarily as top heavy, it does kind of mean this is where you can rotate players in and out as some players come up with injuries or have to miss a handful of games or rest and not necessarily lose too much. Now, it means your ceiling can't get set nearly as high as a team like the Nets might be able to.
Correct.
But your floor is a lot higher and a lot more consistent.
Correct. That's a perfect way to put it. That's exactly what sometimes the trap you can fall into as an NBA fan is to look at the very top and say, hey, these are the top. And by the way, at the end of the season, that is what works. These are the guys that are in that. These are the guys that at the end of the season are still playing because they're the best. A playoff team is going to look very different than a regular season team. Like I'll give an example. I much prefer the Heat in the playoffs than I do in the regular season. Like the Heat are a good example to me of a top-heavy team that when they're in the playoffs, I actually think will be a pretty formidable team when guys like Jimmy Butler, Bam, Kyle Lowry, you know, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, that group is running all of the minutes. The problem is when that group is not going to run all the minutes during the regular season, the drop-off to like KZ Akpala and stuff like and Gabe Vincent is like so dramatic that I have their wins actually start chipping away along the edges, right?
Right.
So then the two examples that I think actually will finish better in the regular season that project a little bit more even across the board. One is the Hawks. Okay. Yeah. So if you look at the Hawks, do they have the top end talent of the Nets? No. Would the Nets be massive favorites against them in a 7-game series? Of course, right? But when you look across their roster, they are able to handle those extra minutes during the regular season a little bit better, right? They have Cam Reddish coming off the bench. They have DeAndre Hunter. They have Kevin Herter and Bogdan Bogdanovic behind Trae Young. They have a couple of really quality bigs and Clint Capella and John Collins. I'm already talking about like a more even baseline for their team. If Okongwu is able to come back from his injury, that actually really helps them regular season too. So you can see they're much better at withstanding some of that, but their core six-man rotation is worse.
Well, and the other piece of it is, too, is maybe I don't want to feel like I'm doubling down on it, but again, when a Kyrie comes out, and let's take Kyrie off the table, he's not going to play this year, let's say. Now, when Kevin Durant comes off, the level of consistency that the other players can play with now in the absence of that star is also different, right? Because everyone's game, the supporting cast, is dependent on what Kevin Durant creates for you, on what James Harden creates for you. So those skill sets that the Nets have compiled make all the sense in the world around these superstars. Whereas, again, the Hawks is the example, is you're kind of swapping out like-for-like skills. It's basically you want to be able to run in a very similar skill set so that you don't have any drop-off from consistency standpoint.
Yeah, so and that's all I mean. I keep couching this by saying playoffs are in regular season. Where the regular season matters is because we saw last year, like I said at the top, like there, it's the difference of playing the Hawks in the second round or the Bucks in the second round. If the Nets are able to overtake the Sixers, then they're playing the fourth seed instead of going in a banged up squad in the Bucks series and not able to get out of it. Right? Like sometimes these seedings do end up really mattering, and so this is where it is important. And look, is this coming up with some stuff to talk about before the season? Yeah, but I think it's actually a good. An instructive sort of exercise to go through with this Nets team. Because I know for me, like, look, I tweeted out 2 weeks ago that the Nets didn't have a single weakness, right? Like, and then basically from that point on, it was like Kyrie can't play and blah, blah, blah. So that it was like within 48 hours of that. So I've been as bullish on this team as you can possibly be, for sure. I just told you I bet them at like a not insignificant amount of money to start the season on the over or the wins. And I actually usually don't even do that because the number seems so flaky to me. But now in this exercise I'm like, oh, maybe it's not as flaky as I thought it was before. All right, I want to get to a couple more, get your opinion. I want to talk about the Knicks a little bit too. And we'll close off in some more Nets thoughts first. You know our friends over at Built Bar. You got to head on over and Built Bar right now and grab a protein bar. You probably tried other protein bars out there on the market. It's like a little cardboardy. It's a little spongy. There's no flavor. They kind of just like were making sure the protein was in there and then didn't really focus on anything else. Not our friends over at Built Bar. They started with the flavors, mint brownie, raspberry, coconut, cookies, and cream. Those aren't ice cream flavors, folks. That's a protein bar that's actually good for you. And then you want to get into the metrics. We like the number, 17 to 18 grams of protein. Calories from 130 to 180. That's the sweet spot. Only 4 to 5 grams of sugar. Only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. All flavors, all super tasty, very healthy for you. Great for grabbing and going on the run. Built Bar is the way to go. Go to built.com. Use the promo code Locked On. You're going to get 15% off your order. Use promo code Locked On for 15% off at built.com.
So dial me in then to some of these other Eastern Conference teams, because when we talk about, let's say that if this scenario is playing out where Kyrie Irving isn't available and maybe the Nets do fall, quote unquote, at least from a regular season standpoint, down the boards a little bit, the Knicks are obviously a curious one because I mentioned them just off the cuff before, but where was that pecking order? Because you even mentioned Miami. Where did they end up stacking up in the regular season? Because you said, I like them even better as a postseason team. So where is that 5 to 8, and then obviously some play-in teams as well.
Yeah, I have a really tight grouping of Miami, Indianapolis, or Indiana, and Boston. Like, we're all right in the 43 to 44-ish win range, somewhere around there. There's basically the group that I mentioned before, and then there's this tight group of those three teams. Then there's a drop-off to Chicago and Washington, and then there's a pretty severe drop-off to the rest of the group, which is like the Raptors, Hornets, Cavs, Detroit, and then Orlando. So the bottom two teams, I think we pretty much know, are tanking. It's a little unclear about what, you know, the Cavs' intentions are, but there's tiers here. Where I was most surprised actually was that the Knicks actually finished in closer to the top tier than they did for the regular season than they did to the middle tier. And this was another one sort of in the same way I went back and kept looking at the Nets one to try to make it so that the win total got higher. I mean, that's not a good process, but it's mostly that I wanted to see where my priors were not jiving with the actual numbers, right? So it's like, what the things I'm thinking about this team do not jive with what I'm seeing here. The Knicks actually finished higher, and I can go through there, but I mean, do you want, I have a theory about why I've seen this, but I mean, I have a couple of reasons why. I'm wondering if you have like any, I'm putting you on the spot here, but if you have any guesses as to why the Knicks, maybe we should head on over to the Knicks podcast and tell them that I'm really bullish on their team. Nets fans hate to hear this crap. I understand, but do you have a guess? I have a couple working theories about why this is.
Well, I mean, off the cuff, my assumption would be that if we take health off the table and their entire team is going to be ready to go for the season, you know, listen, when you throw out a Kemba Walker, a Derrick Rose, a Fournier, and you talk about any of the defensive pieces, you can talk about the bigs that they have there and Noel and Robinson, et cetera, but they're a regular season team. Like, to me, it's almost like what you talked about. This is a team that can steal, quote-unquote, wins throughout the regular season because those matchups or those games might end up being the ones that other teams don't care about. And I know that your model's not taking that into account, but I think it's just the idea that that's what this team is built to do. It's to be very successful in the regular season when other teams aren't as concerned or focused on that. And then when it really comes down to crunch time, when it comes down to playoff basketball, I don't think that this team matches up on a game-to-game basis or on a series-to-series basis, I should say, as well as they would during the regular season.
Yeah, like the Knicks and the Nets played right now in a playoff series, the Knicks would be probably favored to sweep them. Like, so it's not so much that, but if we look at the regular season, there's a couple things you can say about the Knicks that we're not actually going to say about the Nets. One, we've actually seen this. We'd seen this before, and we never saw it if it was going to happen with the Knicks, and then we saw it last year. Tibbs,
I left Julius Randle out of the way, but just, you know, that wasn't a slight Knicks fans. Julius Randle's going to play a big role, obviously, on this team, and now I know where you're going with Tibbs as well.
Tibbs will play his starters a ton of minutes. That actually really matters for piling up wins over what you think they should in terms of a talent level. Playing your starters a lot more minutes than other teams play their starters means you do not have as much of a drop-off when you get past your front line of guys, right? And we already know that the Knicks are willing to do this. They just went through this a whole season. They sort of outkicked their coverage last year on this very idea. They didn't get anyone hurt, and they played their guys like RJ Barrett played tons of minutes. Julius Randle played tons of minutes. These guys ran a lot. They played a certain way around their best players that the Nets just won't do. The Nets are going to rest guys like Harden and KD during the year. We know this to be the case. I can be more bullish on their minutes, on the Knicks' minutes, because they are not playing for the championship. They're actually playing to, you know, for seeding and to get the crowd into it and like to win games now, because that's and I commend them for it. That's what, you know, you should do. But that actually builds up.
How much of a bump do you give like the Knicks players? When do you factor that in your model when you're saying, well, it's Thibodeau, we understand how they run their team. Do you incrementally throw a few more minutes to their starters versus most other teams?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Like for instance, it was hard to be really super bullish on the Nets bigs, like how many minutes guys like Aldridge, Millsap, and Blake were going to play, right?
So you can't go even 35. If I was able to thank you.
Even if I was able to pick out who I thought the best guy was, right? Like, I can't give those guys 32 minutes. I can give Julius Randle 34 minutes a game, right? Yeah. Like, I can give RJ Barrett 36 minutes a game. Is he as good as the other guys? No, but he's better. He's above replacement level for sure. Then you add, like you said, guys like Fournier. You add Kemba Walker, who actually, I didn't go crazy on his minutes because he's got injury concerns. And then you just, you know, you get another year out of Derrick Rose, who looked really good. They got like Alec Burks, these little subtle things that sort of build up. Maybe getting a full season out of Mitch Robinson. My model really likes him for helping with wins. Say what you will about that. Bringing in a guy like Nerlens Noel for the regular season off the bench is that can help you in the regular season. That's a regular season kind of move for a basketball team. It's not a playoff move, but it's a regular season move. And so that team, do they have any guy that's even close to the Nets' top two guys? No, but they have a baseline of guys that are actually all pretty decent, like well above replacement level players, like well above average players, that they will play all those guys all the minutes. Yep. They're not going to test out new things, right? They're not going to give a lot of nights off. That's just not how they roll. And so you can be super aggressive with that. And during the regular, we saw it last year. I was dead wrong about them last year for this reason. My win total on them was really, really low. And I was way off because one, they played their guys all the minutes. Like I thought they might be in kind of punt mode. They weren't. And so they went, you know, B to the W on like
went forward in the sense of we want to be a strong competitive team. That's the check mark for us this year, is to win some games and not worry about that big picture view that they've been unsuccessful at in years past.
Exactly. We know they're going to go for it. They are going to go for the wins. They're going to play these guys a lot of the minutes. They're going to stretch it to every bit that they can. This is that they're playing the short game and not the long game with these guys. That builds up. So this is our team that the Knicks could like finish on the top four. Do I think it's likely? No, but it's not out of the realm of possibility based on slight improvements around their roster and what we already know about how their coach and their front office will run this. They will just try to win. They know they're not going to win the championship. So what they want to do now is make MSG an exciting place to play. They want the home crowd to be in it every single night for a win. And in a way that maybe the Nets aren't with Barkley is because they're not playing for the same thing. Like, you know what I mean? Their end games are slightly different here. And I think during the regular season that we already seen it build up once.
There's one scene that I want to touch on real quick, but this is what last year Andy Makowitz over on the One Giant podcast, he's a Knicks fan, and he was pumped up. He was juiced on what the Knicks were accomplishing last season. And I wasn't trying to take the wind out of his sails, but I was just kind of trying to frame it. I don't think I ever did it this way of this is them accomplishing their goal. Getting a top tier seed, being in the upper half of the playoff bracket, that's the goal. So achieving that, and I kept trying to tell him it's misleading, and I couldn't quite frame it in this way until after the season. And you think about Thibodeau and all these other little details that you run into, and you go, yeah, like that's the reason why different teams are trying to accomplish different things. So you can't, if you're a Knicks fan, be excited, but also don't put weight in the idea of if you're a four seed, it doesn't mean. This is what I kept saying to Andy was. It's not a true seed. And I know I was like, you finish the way you finish and anything could happen, but you're just not that team yet. And this is something that as Nets fans, I spent years doing this. I spent years being juiced when the Nets were trying to sneak in as an eighth seed. I was like, anything can happen, boys. You don't know what we're capable of. When the reality was, we know exactly what you're capable of. There's a ceiling here, and that's not a bad thing, but it is a different way to experience a regular season when you're talking about wanting to be a good team and be competitive night in, night out versus I want to win a championship. That's the only thing that matters here. The only other team I want to ask you about was Boston, because that's a team that I just think is they're not trying to be competitive on a night in, night out basis and have the team, you know, the fan base behind them rallying them for wins. Like I think they still want to be in that upper tier of the Eastern Conference. I don't put them there right now. And yet it's like when you have a guy like Tatum, I just what's happened to them? Why is there anything inside of your projections that would indicate like why this team is possibly going to end up behind the Knicks at the end of the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, they have the two superstar. I'm going to call Jaylen Brown a borderline superstar. They have two superstar-ish kind of players. They're a little weirdly fragile around certain lines that it's hard to tell. Like, if Robert Williams isn't fully healthy, and he's kind of looked pretty bad in the preseason, he actually, I think, matters for their regular season win total. They have Dennis Schroeder coming in off the bench. I think that probably helps them a little bit. But this is a team, that's a team sort of guys that haven't totally proven that these other rotation guys are fully, like, NBA win guys like mm-hmm. Peyton Pritchard, like Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, right? They're all kind of good, but it's unclear if they're like huge difference makers. And
right, are they wins and losses is differentiating? Do they impact wins and losses, right? Are these guys that type of role players, support players, or are they kind of swap them out with anyone around the league and it's not going to matter to the end result?
Well, I think like Romeo Langford might have. I'm just looking this up right now. I think he might have even had like a negative win share last year. I should have had this ready, but I don't. No, he was zero. He was just like a flat zero, right? So it's like, so if you're gonna give, and I'm not saying he's gonna play a ton of minutes, but I think, you know, Grant Williams is gonna play a little bit more. Maybe Aaron Naismith's gonna play a little bit more. These are guys that maybe on the curve, probably at the end of this next season, look a little bit better. It's just kind of hard to know now. Like mm-hmm. more court time for them this year because, you know, Kemba's not around. You know, they have made some changes. They have good, decent veteran guys. They're a little thin sort of on the interior, which kind of, I think, weirdly matters more for the regular season than it does for the playoffs. Like centers, I've said this on other podcasts. I think centers are way more important during the regular season than they are during the playoffs. Like, I think centers actually, traditional centers help you win a little bit more during the season. And like, they're right. Not as important later in the season because they just do a lot of grit and grind stuff that you just don't want to put your superstars through. Right. So like, and maybe you're not locked in on defense and switches every single night with these guys. But that's why I got, for instance, a good example is like, that's why Rudy Gobert is like a really good regular season player. Like that stuff really stacks up during the regular season. You get to the playoffs when you really scheme against it, it doesn't look as good. Right. But during the regular season, guys like that can really pile it up. And the Celtics, that's why Robert Williams probably is a little bit more important to the Celtics for their win total. But I have him like right in that group.
So then let's round it out, get back on the Nets here. Is the only X factor, because you're talking about these different role players, and maybe by the end of the year, based on how they perform, all of a sudden you'd say, yeah, if I went back and I knew this was the expectation for these players' improvements, then yes, that can shift the wins and loss totals. For the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, is, let's assume, no Kyrie Irving, does that make Cam Thomas the X factor as far as, well, if he develops over the course of the year, and his role and impact on this team and the rotation changes, then yes, you'd go back and say, if I knew that Cam Thomas was going to be X throughout this season, I would have moved the Nets a little bit further, you know, up the totem pole to start.
Yeah, I mean, in this model...
And can he even do that? Let's just say, let's put it all to that. Do you think, is that even capable of Cam Thomas being that type of player? And I don't mean his skill set, I just mean, you know, within the models.
In the model, he needs to be more than just a score guy, for sure. And that's going to be maybe a little bit problematic to start. Like, score-only guys actually aren't... That's not perfect here, right? It's good for watching basketball, and I think he will be a guy that grows into, you know, a more diverse game. I do not think it's there now, so projecting him as, like, this dual threat, kind of all over the court, sees everything kind of guy, there's nothing to right now suggest that that's him. Is he a guy that you can bring in for 10 minutes and he'll shoot every single time he gets the ball? Yeah. And some nights that's going to work and some nights it's not. And so it's hard to project him as a super adding a lot of wins kind of guy right now. Just because the nature of his game does not really look like that. And so if I'm trying to find a comp for him, I can't comp him to like a superstar guard right now because there's really no, you know, there's no one, the pedigree isn't exactly there. So you have to like factor in why guys like Cade Cunningham go at the top of a draft and Cam Thomas doesn't. Like, you do have to factor pedigree a little bit before you totally know. So a Cade Cunningham is going to project, when it's an unknown, is going to project a little bit more like your average top pick at that position, right? And so, which is more times better than it is worse. And so with Cam Thomas, you do have to kind of factor in where he went based on. That doesn't mean like 2 years from now you aren't doing it. I'm just saying going in, you cannot. It'd be criminal to say, hey, I saw him for 5 games in summer league and a couple of preseason games. I'm going to project him like Kyrie Irving. That's irresponsible. So you have to sort of put him around where guys in this group finish, and that's like sometimes just an average NBA player.
Yeah, and even if he were to be coming in and shooting lights out, again, what's the impact to everyone else around him, right? The superstar effect of a KD to everybody else. So how does that impact it? I will be curious, though. Maybe the tease is, looking back into it, if you treated Cam Thomas like a top 15 or top 12 player, as we talked about what teams wish they would have already taken him based off of summer league, I wonder if you gave him that pedigree label close to the top of the draft, how would that maybe change the projections? By the way, like, Doug does all this work, as you may have noticed over the course of the podcast. I haven't been providing the information or context. Doug has, but I find all this stuff fascinating. Like, if I could just use Doug's model and Doug's brain and keep going, now try this. Now sprinkle in a little bit of this for me, buddy.
That's why it takes so long. Like, it's doing that exercise. It's saying, you know, like, you know what, is it dialed in from like a year's worth of it? No, I don't do it the same way. I probably, you know, some of these other guys who especially are adjusting caps and like trying to figure out salaries. No, I don't do it to that level, but I think I do it more than most people. Right. And so, and you do have to go through each of these situations and say to yourself, hey, like, what is the likelihood here? Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't give Kemba Walker as many minutes as I give James Harden. Not like that, that would even be, you know, the right thing to do. But I'm just saying the examples of these things, you have to take into context. You have to watch a decent amount of basketball. Like, you have to follow basketball, at least on a minutes standpoint, pretty well, right? To like, and injury wise, to know about how bullish you can be. You have to have some idea about what the rotations are going to be, like moderate guesses. And like, most of the time, still comes down to the superstars and the guys that most people know. But there are contexts for all this stuff. And like, look, I was off by like a couple wins the other day because of one of the index matches that I had on what player was wrong. So there are mistakes that get made. So I think it's just a fun exercise.
It's completely enthralling.
And it's a fun exercise that sometimes is like sort of like when the Nets aren't as high as I thought, Doug,
but only if it's confirming what everybody wants you to tell them.
And it can make you look like an idiot, frankly. There's been lots of times saying this stuff ahead of time, like prognosticating about this is a best way to bring a freezing cold take into your life because it's putting yourself out there and just saying and trying to think of a reason why. Not even think of a reason, explain the reasoning behind something. And I understand, like, it can look wrong a lot of times. I said the Warriors were going to be terrible last year. And I had them projected, like, to win, like, be third worst in the West. And that just didn't happen.
It was close.
I could go through why I think that didn't happen the way I thought it was going to. But, look, I'll put my L's out there. I take L's on this stuff all the time. There's plenty of things that I I'm right about, so that's why I'm not...
More wins on the ledger. More wins on the ledger than losses, Dougster.
Hopefully. And just in life in general, I think. Okay, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. We did a little bit of the Bucks preview with Cam Pittman over the weekend, so make sure you go back and listen to that one. And we'll do a Bucks preview again, first game of the season, little hype train here going for Tuesday as we head in. Make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel. All these episodes are going up on YouTube. We'll be live a few times also after games this year as well. So make sure you like and subscribe over on the Nets, or Locked On Nets, excuse me, YouTube channel. The link will be in the show notes.
Expectations. That's what we're talking about here, friends. How about this one for you? A nice blend of prediction and surprise seems to be at the heart of the best art. Wendy Carlos.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We will be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.